off. Turn it off. Turn it off. Oh, boy, this is a rough day for me. This is a really rough day. Oh, boy. Evening, everybody. This show's called Carving It Up Live. I'm Bryson. I tend to be in better moods than I am in today, but this is a rough one. Because the earliest exit for the Golden State Warriors, minus 2019-20, when literally everybody was hurt, just occurred less than 24 hours ago. In a 24-point loss to the Sacramento Kings of all franchises, Golden State is done. And as painful as it is for me, as a guy who strongly, and I want to emphasize, strongly believes in pick integrity. When you make a selection, you are tied to that selection until it is either proven correct or incorrect. Well, I picked the Warriors to go on and win the championship before the season started. Obviously, I was wrong on that. As painful as that is, it pales in comparison to the fact that as a 20-year-old young man, the last remnants of my childhood have ceased to exist. The Golden State Warriors dynasty, as currently constructed, is over. The Golden State Warriors, my Golden State Warriors, will never win another title with the key three of Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green. Those days have passed, ladies and gentlemen, and it hurts me to my core. We'll talk about a lot of stuff on the show today. Lakers going to get eliminated in 2 weeks by the Denver Nuggets. Get into that in about 15, 20 minutes or so. Carving up the context around Bill Belichick. Why no team has hired him. Bryson's best 10 and the most painful Bryson's best 10 I've ever done, which is top 10 moments of the Golden State Warriors dynasty. You'll definitely want to stay tuned for that in about 45 minutes. At the end of today's show, the Dallas Cowboys, a point we're missing on them in their all-in quest. This is a bad day. This is a very bad day. Patrick Brown's in the comments. Patrick has been trolling me all day. He is apparently unaware of what's about to happen to his team in 2 weeks, but right now it's my time to eat crow. He says, "Boys to Men once sung Into the Road." That's a great song, but it's an appropriate song for today, Patrick. Patrick, it's the sad violin music for me. Yeah, it's... this is one of those shows. Like, I always try and come in an upbeat, hyped up, ready to go mood. And today, simply, folks, is not one of those days. It's not one of those days in any way, shape, or form. So let's go and get started. But first, the Golden State Warriors were eliminated last night by the Sacramento Kings by a final score of 118-94 at the Golden One Center in Sacramento. They lit their cute little beam, which is nice. You know, it's the biggest moment in the history of the Kings franchise, unless you count out the days of Tiny Archibald. But to their credit, they got the job done, and sent the Golden State Warriors home packing. Now, there's a lot of different areas to cover this. I don't want to be too long-winded. We have a lot of things to talk about on the show today, but I want to kind of zero in on what this means for the Warriors franchise and really what has been the slow death of the Warriors dynasty in the last couple of years to a certain degree, and certainly this season. So first of all, Steph Curry, who's the head of the Warriors snake and has been for this entire run, obviously Steph is undeniably one of the 10 greatest basketball players ever. Steph did not play poorly. Now, Steph did have a multitude of turnovers. If I have the stat right, he had 6 turnovers. In fact, that's not going to get the job done. He was minus 21 when he was on the floor. But 8 for 16, shot 50%, went 3 for 7 from three-point range, scored 22 points, grabbed 4 boards, only had 2 assists. If you watched that game last night, Steph was as unable to create separation as I think I've ever seen him, and just struggling to get any open looks at all, because simply put, no one else could space the floor. Klay Thompson was 0 for 10 from the field. More on Klay in just a second. Draymond Green, who did score 12 points, is not known for being a scorer. He's more known for doing other stuff. Wasn't great defensively, but had a good first half on Sabonis. Struggled at times in the second half, especially once Alex Lynn checked in and didn't do a great job on Harrison Barnes. Only 6 assists, 3 rebounds. And a very troubling stat is that Steph Curry scored 22 points last night, and the Golden State Warriors starters, the rest of the Golden State Warriors starters, scored 26. So Steph scored 4 fewer points than the other 4 Warriors starters. The Warriors starters in totality, including Steph, this is a wild stat, folks, outscored 104-48 by the Kings starters. This kid for the Sacramento Kings, and props to him, he played really well. Keon Ellis, 15 points, doing a good job playing defense, knocking down 3-point shots. De'Aaron Fox did his thing. Keegan Murray was awesome with 32 points, hit 8 3-pointers. The Kings were, in every sense of the word, the better basketball team last night, and they deserved to win that basketball game. For Golden State, here's what I'm looking at. So, some of the hallmarks of the Golden State Warriors dynasty has always been about, you know, showing up in big games, being ready to go, stepping up when the moment calls for it. Now, I'm not alluding to Steph. If anybody, I haven't seen anybody rip Steph, because if anyone watched that game last night, Steph was not exactly the reason for the Warriors struggling. There's no question about that. Klay Thompson got the nickname of Game 6 Klay, in it basically saying, hey, when the moment calls for Klay Thompson to show up, you can rely on him to show up. But let's look at Klay Thompson. Last night was the elimination game. You win or you win the game or you go home. Klay Thompson in elimination games, if we have the stat, from 2015, so the start of the Warriors dynasty, up through 2022, the most recent championship. Here's Klay Thompson in elimination games. So basically, if the Warriors lose, they are donezo. Klay Thompson stats in elimination games, they're phenomenal from 2015 to 2022. Klay Thompson, 26.5 points per game, 4 rebounds, 1.6 steals, which is impressive, shoots 46% from the field, 50% from three-point range. He hits about 5.5 threes per game and has a defensive rating of 107, so he could lock up. That was, you know, really peak Klay. Could hit 5 threes a game and lock up your best perimeter offensive player, particularly your best point guard. So Klay Thompson was great in elimination games throughout the Warriors dynasty. The last 2 years, he has been simply unplayable. And I'm not exaggerating when I say this. We can put up his stats in elimination games the last couple of years. He averages 8 points a game. On these shooting splits are insane. He averages 8 points a game on 16% from the field, 17% from three-point range. He's good for about a 3.5 per game. His defensive rating is not good at all. It's only 118, down from 107. So the one of the hallmarks of the Warriors dynasty, Klay shows up in big games. If you noticed when I predicted on Monday that the Warriors would win last night, I didn't really bring up Klay Thompson. I'm like, okay, he's finding a rhythm. But last year, if you remember, hey, Game 6 Klay, here we go. Game 6 Klay, we've seen the last of him, at least in a Warriors uniform. And matter of fact, Klay Thompson as an individual, we have likely seen his last game as a Golden State Warrior. To Draymond Green. And this has fairly, I think, been, you know, a lot of the season has been put on him, is the fact that, hey, you have the 2 suspensions. You have the suspension for choking Rudy Gobert, which I say right now, I said in November, I say in April, I absolutely to this day defend Draymond Green for doing what he did in the Timberwolves loss with the whole Gobert thing. My issue with Draymond is that he held on to Gobert too long. I don't want any NBA players getting choked out there. But Rudy Gobert, I did a whole like film breakdown of the altercation. Rudy Gobert, big 7'2" Rudy Gobert, you know, typical, you know, kind of playing to his reputation, goes to choke 6'6" Klay Thompson in an altercation when Klay's getting into a beef with Jaden McDaniels. He's about to put his big long arms around Klay. Draymond comes blindside and actually wraps Rudy Gobert in a chokehold. Draymond got 5 games for that. I defended it because he was defending a teammate. I would actually have an issue if Draymond didn't defend him in some way, shape, or form. The punch on Yusuf Nurkic was inexcusable. And no matter how you slice it, Yusuf Nurkic is just guarding Draymond Green in the post. Draymond, unprovoked, swings around, clocks him in the jaw. And he misses about 20 games after that. Comes back on MLK Day. This is the incident with Nurkic happened in mid-December. He came back in mid-January. So he missed a whole month of action. Now, mind you, the Golden State Warriors, all of that still won 46 games this year. Ironically, two more than they did a year ago. Now, the problem was, a year ago, 44 wins got you the sixth seed. This year, 46 wins gets you the 10th seed. Goes to show you how loaded the Western Conference was this year. But if you look at Golden State, they finished as the 10th seed, okay? They finished three games back of the sixth seed, which is the Phoenix Suns at 49 wins, three games back of avoiding the play-in tournament entirely. I say that, and I transition to you to a Draymond stat that I've given out the last few weeks, that if Draymond just stays on the floor, we're good. So this stat does not count the play-in loss to the Kings. This is just regular season, all 82 games. When Draymond Green this season played a full game, Golden State was 13 games over 500. In the games he got thrown out, 1-3. For the record, 2-11. You see down there, 2-11 since 2019 when Draymond Green gets thrown out. When Draymond didn't play at all, and most of those games, you see the 13-14 record, most of those games were due to suspension, not just, you know, sitting out or injury, whatever. A game under 500 when Draymond doesn't play, two games under 500 when he gets thrown out, 13 games over 500 when he plays. I have been Draymond Green's biggest defender, I think, in the media. I think Draymond has been, we'll talk about the Warriors dynasty, top 10 moments, Bryce's best 10 moments in the Warriors dynasty later in the show. They do not get to four championships. They are not a dynasty if they don't have Draymond Green. The toughness and the intensity and just the overall skill he brings to the defensive end, the catalyst he is offensively, being able to get the Splash Brothers open looks, the leadership, holding guys accountable, you know, doing something that Steph, Clay, that's not really in their DNA, is to kind of get in guys' faces, be confrontational. Draymond has been invaluable, and I'd absolutely bring Draymond Green back next year. Everybody's suggesting, hey, you got to move him. I can't do that. He's too important to the Golden State Warriors. What is Shannon Sharp as a saying, production and tolerance or something? If Draymond's still productive, which clearly you saw that stat, he is, you keep Draymond Green. And to the last, and certainly not least, most important member of the Warriors' core three, Mr. Curry. I said last night, I did an IG live, a brief IG live in the waning moments of that basketball game last night. And I was thinking about Steph, and I've religiously said, well, 2 years ago, I thought he was the best player in the world. That finals, that not just the finals, the playoff run he put together 2 years ago was legendary. The finals against Boston, against the defensive player of the year, Marcus Smart, was something to behold. Said he was the best player in the world then. When Jokic won the title last year, I had Steph at number two. And I've maintained that all season long. Like, get Steph in the playoffs and he's dangerous. Still believe that. But Steph has transitioned into a portion of his career, the stage of his career, where he's still great. 26 a game, led the league by far in three-pointers made. For the record, played 77 games this year, so he didn't suffer any major injuries. He has officially entered into the stage that LeBron James did about 2-3 years ago, probably 3 years ago after the Solomon Hill injury happened, you know, when he dove into LeBron's ankle and that was the last we saw of peak prime LeBron James. He's in that stage where he's still great. He can, dare I say, still be the best player on a title contender or title team, rather. He can't carry average teams deep in the playoffs anymore. Simply can't. Last year he could. 50 points against the Sacramento Kings, took the Lakers six games, and you know, as I said, games 1-4, go either way games. Can't do that anymore. Still be great, still have great playoff performances, doesn't diminish what he's done in the past, but he is 36 years of age, and I can prove it to you with these stats. Now, we're throwing out a lot of stats today, but I think they back up my argument pretty well. Steph Curry was having, if not for the Warriors' record, an MVP-caliber season through the first part of the year. So prior to the All-Star break, here's Steph's numbers. 28 a game on 46% from the field, 42% from three, which for a 6'3 guard is crazy efficient. Five assists, 4.5 rebounds, playing 33 and a half minutes. After the All-Star break, all of those numbers, including his minutes, plummet. And that matters to me. He goes from 28 points to 22 points. Shooting splits go from 46, 42 to 42, basically 38. Five assists, 4 rebounds, and 31 minutes a game. His minutes went down after the All-Star break. So you would think, hey, he'd be fresher. Wasn't as efficient. Steph seemed, and I watched the games, I'm like, hey, Steph's having rough nights. The Warriors are somehow finding a way to win. Steph seemed to wear down at the end of these games because he is 36 years old and he is in year 15. That's where LeBron was about 2 years ago. It's where most guys are when they get to the stage of this career. Listen, the guys can't be 25-year-old springy athletes their entire lives. You know, Charles Barkley had a great line last night. Sports are for young people. They're not for old people. Now, Steph is still awesome. Steph is still absolutely a top 10 player in the world. But he's not going to be the guy who can carry a team to a championship, which, for the record, he did 2 years ago. That 2022 title's looking even better for Steph's resume in hindsight. But that's who the Golden State Warriors are today. They are a dynasty that, as currently constructed, is dead. You cannot win a title in 2024. Next, really, that's past now. In 2025. With Steph, Draymond, Klay as your key pieces. You can't do it anymore. You can win with Steph as your key piece. And as for Steph, and this is the last point I'll make. I've definitely said it for about 3 weeks now, ever since the Draymond ejection against Orlando. And I'm really nervous about this today. Especially as the news on this front has poured in over the last 48 hours or so. That I'm really nervous about the next 4 months for the Golden State Warriors. I'm not that nervous about free agency because, frankly put, if I know anything about Joe Lacob, that dude is pissed off how the season ended. Joe Lacob, for those who don't know, owner of the Golden State Warriors. He is as aggressive as they come. He's the Stan Kroenke, who's one of my favorite team owners in sports, of the NFL. He will go for it. The next 4 months are going to be key to the Warriors in terms of if they can compete for anything. The next 2 years or so, 2-3 years, if we're being generous. I have said a few months ago, I'll say now, I think there's a chance that the 2024 Olympic Games could play a similar factor in Steph Curry's decision on his future the way it did with LeBron James in 2008. Remember that now, again, different scenarios. LeBron was in his early 20s. Steph is 36. Different stage in their career. LeBron hadn't won a title. Steph had four. Again, totally different stages of their career. Remember LeBron? Ah, Mr. Cleveland, I'm staying here my whole career. Then he goes to Beijing. Then he hangs out with Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh and Kobe and Chris Paul, Dwight Howard. Pretty good team. LeBron looks around. He's like, whew, it is fun playing with these guys. You know, guys like Mo Williams, Anderson Varejao, Zydrunas Ilgauskas, ain't that fun carrying them to 60 wins a year and won finals in 07. Be nice if I could play with a couple of these guys in my future, and 2 years later, we went to Miami. Steph Curry's going to play with LeBron, Kevin Durant, Jason Tatum, Joel Embiid, and a host of other awesome American basketball players in 4 months, or three, four months at the Olympics. And he's going to look around and see, okay, LeBron's got Anthony Davis. Kevin Durant's got Devin Booker. A guy who's not even on Team USA. Giannis has Damian Lillard. Kawhi, who just joined Team USA, he's got Paul George. Jimmy Butler, who's not on the team, but he has Bam Adebayo, who is on the team. And I'm looking around, and I'm seeing, okay, all of these contending basketball teams have a number two co-star except for me. Draymond is still good. Draymond can still be valuable to a title team. He cannot be your second best player in 2024 or 2025. So Steph will look around and see and say, yeah, what I got around me isn't going to cut it. What these guys around have around them, it will. And I think it could impact his decision on his future. Where Steph, he's always been Mr. Warrior, and I don't doubt that. I don't doubt his sincerity in that regard. He loves the Bay Area. His family's lived there for 15 years now. He's raised three kids with four on the way. Number four on the way, rather. But he looks around and he says, what am I hoping to accomplish here? I'm past the stage where I'm winning MVP, so that's done. Klay's going to be gone. That's my man. It's my splash brother. He's going to be gone after this year. Chris Paul's contract's off the books. We'll see if he comes back in a reduced dealing. There's a chance that happens. But he looks around. Do I want to be loyal or do I want to maybe stack a couple championships, you know, maybe get to five, dare I say six, and it becomes a conversation. Hey, man, can't put Magic over Steph now. I mean, he's got six championships. Look at the longevity, one for two different teams. Steph's thinking about that. And Steph had a quote last night I just want to win. He didn't say, I want to win here. I just want to win. Golden State Warriors have more pressure on them this offseason. Joe Lacob, Peter Guber, all the Warriors brass, Mike Dunleavy Jr., Steve Kerr, have more pressure on them right now than they've had in the history of their professional basketball careers to put the requisite talent around Steph Curry. I think they have the assets to do it. A lot of young players. Jonathan Kuminga could be turned into a potential win-now superstar guy. But as we see here today, the Golden State Warriors, as currently constructed, will never win another championship ever again. It's a hard truth. It's a tough pill to swallow as a Warriors fan. As a guy who became a fan in 2013, right before a 51-win season, the Warriors ended up losing in the first round of the Clippers that year. What was a great 7-game series. Hire Steve Kerr that offseason, and the rest, as they say, is history. But that's reality, and that's where they sit today. And you even look at their body language, and I'll move to the Lakers. You even look at their body language. Klay Thompson is, before he leaves the floor in Sacramento, which was weird because it was Sacramento. It wasn't the Chase Center. It wasn't San Francisco. But in Sacramento, Golden One Center, he's like looking around, you know, at the fans before he goes to the locker room. Like, Klay knows. Steve Kerr had a comment, hey, can't stay on top forever. Well, that's probably true, but if you want to keep Steph around, you're going to have to try and make some move to make sure you at least are in position to get back on top in the last few years of his career. But listen, for Golden State, a lot of offseason decisions to come. The decision on Klay, my guess is he leaves for more money elsewhere, and I don't blame him in the slightest for doing that, but that's reality where they're at. Klay goes from the Klay numbers in elimination games from 2015 to 2022 averages 26 a game on 50% three-point shooting. Last couple of years in elimination games, he averages 8 points a game on 17% from three. And he's not close to the player he was defensively. And by the way, by no fault of his own, because he had basically the two worst injuries a basketball player could suffer. He literally suffered them back-to-back before he played his next game. ACL tear in 2019, Achilles tear in November of 2020. Sucks for Klay. And I hate to see him go out like this. This is disappointing. Barry Grant Jr., host of the All Even Podcast, big Lakers fan. He's not going to like what I say about his team in just a second. This is what Barry says. I'll leave my response for the 8 o'clock spot. Yes, tune in the 8 o'clock spot tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific time on the Grid Network. I'm going to have to eat some serious crow. Because I'm not a flip-flopper. If I'm nothing else, I am loyal to my picks that the Golden State Warriors will win the title this year. And there were points in time, by the way, this season I came close to selling it, and then they finished the year 27-12. They're great defensively. This little bitty tiny team leads the league in rebounds. Yeah, it's listen, had they lost to Sacramento, given how the Warriors won a close-ish game to start the season against the Kings. Klay hit a game winner in November. The Warriors won by one. Malik Monk hit a game winner. I think that was also November or December. The Kings won by one. The Kings and Warriors had a back-and-forth crazy game. The Kings won by one. It was down to the wire every time. So for that to be just an avalanche was stunning. But the dynasty ends on a whimper rather than a bang. But I want to reemphasize this. The dynasty, as currently constructed, is over. The good news is, and I've suggested this for about 2 weeks now, this guy in Milwaukee, he's playing his last game as a Buck this month if he plays at all in the playoffs. Because I do not think Giannis will be a Milwaukee Buck next season. To me, the most likely destination is the Knicks. After that, I think it's Golden State. We know Giannis and Steph are close. They're tight. They like each other. The fit would work. Giannis gets to go from playing for Doc Rivers to playing for Steve Kerr. You know, from playing with Dame, who's great, but he's not Steph. He's kind of like Steph light to a certain degree. That'd be a good fit. Barry, all I'm going to say is you should be ashamed of yourself for being such a homer and not an objective analyst as you are. I'm appalled. Well, listen, if I'm nothing else, I'm certainly objective. And I wasn't just, hey, the Warriors, it's just like 2015 all over again. They're going to win the next three championships. No, I backed up everything I said with stats. And listen, they didn't come to fruition last night. That's the real, of being in the play-in tournament is at least in the 9-10 game. You lose, you're done. Your season's over. And Sacramento just came in and outplayed the Golden State Warriors from the jump. Give them credit. They got to shine their little purple flashlight in the air. It's a really cute moment for them. Moving on to the other team. Well, there's four teams in California. To the do we have another comment here? See, then this is, you talk about me being a homer. You talk about me being a homer. Lakers in six. Well, let's talk about the Lakers, shall we? So they beat the New Orleans Pelicans 110-106. I knew the game would be closer against New Orleans than it was on Sunday. Listen, you get embarrassed like that at home, you're going to come out with more fight. I thought the Lakers win relatively comfortably, kind of pull away late. It's really not what they're able to do. LeBron, AD seem to kind of run out of gas. But the Lakers are able to pull away 110-106 against the New Orleans Pelicans. Anthony Davis did hit a free throw at the end of the game that Reggie Miller suggested he should have missed. Not sure why. That's another conversation for another day. But LeBron James, LeBron's numbers, I think, are excellent. 23-9-9. I didn't think LeBron played that well, to be honest with you. I think he kind of struggled, fell asleep a couple times on defense. He only shot 6-for-20 from the field. And a guy who's been red hot from three-point range, this is the greatest three-point shooting season of LeBron's career. Only went 1-for-5. Anthony Davis doing a pretty good job. Had a huge offensive rebound late in that basketball game to kind of seal the deal for the Lakers. AD played solid. Zion was the best player on the floor, dropped 40 points in what was, to this point, the biggest game in his career. But in what was a kind of a basketball tragic, perfect representation of Zion's career. He's awesome. He's playing bully ball. Nobody on the floor can stop him. And his hamstring goes. And he has to leave the game. And it's already been reported today he will not play on Friday against the Sacramento Kings, which to me, huge advantage Sacramento, especially the way CJ McCollum and Brandon Ingram played. More on that on Friday. Here's the thing for the Lakers. So I said Monday's show that their season is over. Given where the way the bracket plays out for them, their season is over regardless, either on Friday or in 2 weeks. Now, they ain't got to worry about playing on Friday because they were able to survive New Orleans. Had they lost, you say, hey, they would have lost the Warriors. Well, that's the part I was wrong on. But they would have lost on Friday to Sacramento because I don't think they've beaten Sacramento a single time this season. If not, they only got one this season. The Kings have owned the Lakers. Fortunately for them, they get a 7-game series against the team that has owned them in every way, shape, and form. We can put up the graphic. All graphics provided by my man Alfred Parso Jr. Shout out to Alfred. All stats provided by our friends at StatMuse. How about the last 8 matchups? Lakers, Nuggets. Lakers have a 115 offensive rating against Denver. They average about 110 points per game, shoot 47% for the field, 34% from three-point range. That ain't great. On the other end of the floor, they have a defensive rating of 123. They give up 118 points per game relative to their 110, give up 50% from the field and 40% from three-point range. They have a net rating of minus 8.7, and they are 0-for. In their last 8 matchups, they have not beaten the Denver Nuggets one single time. And I am appalled to a certain extent about how many people are said, hey, I'll tell you, Lakers got a puncher's chance against the Denver Nuggets. No, they don't. For the record, neither did my Warriors. I say that because all throughout this season, all throughout this hot stretch for the Warriors, I'm like, they can beat anybody in a 7-game series. Denver's going to be tough. All season long, all you know, throughout the hot streak, I'm like, I don't know about Denver. That's a tough matchup. I'm also going to be objective and say the Los Angeles Lakers season is going to end in about 2 weeks. Maybe a week and a half, depending on how the series plays out. More on the predictions on the series on Friday's show, but I don't think it is crazy to pick a Denver Nuggets team over the Los Angeles Lakers, who, you know, have the best player in the series by far, Nikola Jokic. They have the more reliable second player. Jamal Murray is a significantly better playoff performer than Anthony Davis is. They have the way, 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 1,000 times way better coach in Michael Malone over Darvin Ham, whose play calling on the offensive end of the floor was confusing at best down the stretch. Why in God's name are they not attacking the rim with the Pelicans and having no shot blocker out there? Let's see. The Nuggets are a better shooting team, a better defensive team. They have home court advantage. Their home court advantage is probably the most difficult in the league because of the altitude. And, oh, by the way, they just won the most recent championship. They have the best record in the Western Conference, tied with the best record in the Western Conference in a West that was loaded. And, I don't know, they won the last 8 matchups. You mean to tell me that this Lakers team, who has not been good defensively all season long, that has a very limited head coach, who is Anthony Davis, who, I'm going to remind you, it's hit is coming. Coin flip Davis is on the way. Anthony Davis has gotten outplayed by Jokic virtually every time they played in the last couple of seasons. And AD, who's to me an all-time great defender, can't stop Jokic. For the record, in AD's defense, nobody can stop Jokic. I mean, that's, you know, a guy's 7 feet one, inch tall, right? A little teardrop. He's got a good mid-range. He's got a three. He hits those wild, like, almost look as he's throwing it over his head shots, you know, at the end of the shot clock. Like, you can't guard that. But this idea that in a series where LeBron was awesome in game four, what did he drop? Like a 40-point triple-double, almost played the entire game. Anthony Davis at one point had a 40-point game, and all these guys showing up for the Lakers. Austin Reeves had a good series, and they didn't win a single game. And Lakers fans say, hey, Bryson, come on. Every game was close down the stretch. Every game was within reach. Game three, the Nuggets kind of pulled away, but game one, it was within three with about a minute left. The same case in game two. Game four, I thought the Lakers were going to win until Jokic hit that circus shot that wasn't kind of the difference. Came down to the last shot that game did. Here's the problem. Denver kind of specializes in that. I mean, do we not remember some of those games against Minnesota that were close until Denver, Jokic, Jamal Murray, the most unstoppable two-man game in the NBA, took over? Phoenix, the only close game that there was Phoenix. They kind of pulled away in game four, but that was about it. They mollywopped the Suns in games five and six. The Lakers, all four games, clutch games, as the NBA calls them. Nuggets won all three. And in the NBA Finals, they lost the one close game to Miami in game two, but game five, in a game, for the record, they played horribly, and in the offensive end, they still found a way to win that. It is amazing. When I'm hearing Lakers fans try to make the case, hey, you know, this is a different year this year. Funny. The three matchups that the Lakers played the Nuggets, it should be, this to me matters. These weren't just average, run-of-the-mill, regular season games. No. These teams played on opening night of the season in Denver, Colorado. They put these teams, after all the trash talk, both ways. And this is, for the record, under my definition of a rivalry, this is a rivalry. To me, in the NBA, you got to beat the other squad at least once in a seven-game series. You got to do that. Otherwise, it's not a rivalry. Lakers beat them in 2020. Nuggets beat them last year. They put the Lakers in Denver on opening night. And the Lakers, LeBron, AD, everybody, Austin Reeves, D'Angelo Russell, gets to watch, or has to watch rather, the Denver Nuggets get their new championship rings. And they're in their psyche thinking, man, if we had just finished some of those games, we would be in LA getting our rings and they'd be watching us. Denver won that game. Jokic had a triple-double. The second time they matched up in LA was the unveiling of the Kobe Bryant statue, a massive moment in Lakers history. The whole city was fired up. The Lakers were fired up. Denver won that game. Closed out in the last 5 minutes, I might add. The last time they played was a momentous occasion for Mr. LeBron James, who became the first and only player in NBA history to eclipse 40,000 points, and the Nuggets won that game as well. About as high stakes as you could have in the regular season, didn't matter. I mean, it's unbelievable. You'd think Bruce Brown was like Manu Ginobili, like the greatest, one of the greatest sixth man of all time, or Jamal Crawford. This is probably the first time I brought Bruce Brown the entire season. What was he in Indiana with the Pacers? I think they might have traded him. Like, where the heck is Bruce Brown? Oh, he's the difference in the series. Really? If he was the difference of a series, Brooklyn Nets would have won a championship 3 years ago. So this idea that the Lakers, if both teams are fully healthy, can get more than a game off this Denver team is delusional. They can't defend them. The matchup with AD and Jokic favors Jokic every single time down the floor. There's a significant coaching advantage with the Denver Nuggets. The best player in the series plays for the Denver Nuggets. Denver Nuggets, the more reliable second star, plays for the Denver Nuggets. They just won the championship. They have home court. It's probably the most difficult home court in the league because of the altitude in Denver. What are we talking about here? This idea that this is going to be this classic revenge series. No, it's not. No, it is not. I would go so far as to argue that this will be not Denver's easiest series. I think their easiest series will come in the second round against Phoenix or Minnesota. I think they match up great with both. But this is going to be kind of a sleeper. Yeah, the games will be fun. They'll be close. But haven't we seen plenty of series like that where, I mean, Boston and Brooklyn about 2 years ago played a first-round series that I heard some dub as a close sweep. They still swept them. Didn't matter if the games are close. Boston swept Brooklyn out of the playoffs. Didn't matter. If you can't close down the stretch with the Lakers, which the Lakers are not better than the Nuggets at, when they play one another, it's going to be a pretty short series. And I feel extremely confident in saying that. Now, for the record, in defense of the Lakers, like this whole notion, hey, they should tank the game to avoid the Nuggets and in the first round, play them in the next round, or play them if you get in the playoffs, in the Western Conference Finals, that idea was always ludicrous. It was ludicrous. You get in the playoffs, you have a chance to get in the playoffs. Okay, you don't duck the opposition. That's cowardly. So, I mean, props to the Lakers. They were never going to do that anyway, but props them for not doing that. But have they lost? They're done on Friday. Sacramento's beating them, especially given what we've seen from the two this season when they matched up. So, listen, props to the Lakers. Three-time play-in champions. Go ahead and hang that banner along with the in-season tournament banner. And they'll be out in five games to the Denver Nuggets. I mean, it'll be a quick series. I'll be kind. LeBron James, to me, is the greatest player ever. We can argue about that another day. Out of respect to the great LeBron James, I'll give the Lakers a game. A home game at the Crypt, and that's all they'll get. So expect a quick series between the champs and the Lakers. I'm telling you, this is not going to be a classic first round. It's not. I mean, to me, I would be shocked if it went six games. Shocked. You know, what they say, history often repeats itself. And I'm here. Well, they beat him 4 years ago. Okay, Jokic was Jokic and Murray, for the record, were basically kids at that point. LeBron was still in his prime. I mean, come on, totally. No, there was no home court advantage. For the record, you didn't have to go on the road either. And I'm not one of those people who discounts the Lakers championship. Oh, it's a Mickey Mouse ring and whatever. Now, listen, they won that championship fair and square. The circumstances were the circumstances, which were not easy. Ask any player that played in the bubble. That was no fun. And they came out with the Larry O'Brien trophy at the end, and they deserve nothing but credit for doing that. It was one of the more difficult, not runs in terms of the opponents, but more difficult circumstances to win a championship. Every team was under the same circumstances. Lakers came away with the title. So I'm not one of those people that's like, that title doesn't count. Yeah, it does. Okay, that Larry O'Brien trophy goes with the other ones that they have at the Lakers, the other 16, and that's the reality of it. So there you go. Transitioning to the NFL and a story revolving Bill Belichick. So let me back up a little bit. It's Carving Up the Context Day. It's Wednesday. Carving Up the Context and Bryson's Best 10 Day. Two of my favorite segments I do. And I'm carving up the context. There's always a story. There's always something that I try to look at and see, hey, is there something to kind of pull out of this? Well, there is. Bill Belichick and the Atlanta Falcons looked like they were close to a deal until a certain pretty notable individual in the NFL stepped in and kind of nixed it. So here we go. In this week's edition of Carving the Context, we're going to talk about Bill Belichick. So it's prime time. Deion Sanders says, give me my theme music. On this week's edition of Carving Up the Context, let's talk about Bill Belichick, who was, let's just say, him and the Patriots amicably agreed to part ways at the conclusion of the 2023 season, which concluded 24 years of what was one of the greater runs by a head coach in any franchise, in any sport that we've seen. Six Super Bowl titles, countless AFC championships, even more so division titles. I think the Patriots got like 18 in that stretch that he had when he was with Brady, which is nuts. But Belichick was on the open market. Eight teams, a quarter of the league, needed head coaches. None of them hired a guy who some consider to be the greatest coach ever. A new report came out from three sources who are about as close to the New England Patriots as you could possibly be, okay? Don Van Netta, Seth Wickersham, and Jeremy Fowler. All excellent sources. Trust anything that they say. They came out with a piece on ESPN this morning that was fascinating, I found. So Arthur Blank is the owner of the Atlanta Falcons, and he is, by all accounts, pretty good friends with Robert Kraft, which a lot of billionaires are friends with billionaires. That's just, you are the company you keep. And the Falcons, if you remember 2-3 months ago, interviewed Belichick not once but twice, and it looks like, okay, Bill's going to Atlanta. Going to the NFC South. He's going to go be at the Falcons. Obviously, that would have meant he'd have been had Kirk Cousins as his quarterback, a young, talented, fun Atlanta roster, probably would have been the favorites to win the division this coming year. Still are anyway, one could argue, although we'll see what Tampa Bay does. And according to this article, Robert Kraft had a conversation with Atlanta Falcons owner Arthur Blank and essentially deterred the Falcons from hiring Belichick. Basically, it was like, hey, I don't know if you want to do this. I don't know if you want to hire this guy. Like, watch out. Like, you're my butt. And again, I don't know how close Blank and Kraft are. Again, a lot of owners are buddies with each other. That's pretty common. A lot of owners are enemies with each other. That's also common. But these two seem to be relatively tight. So it makes sense for Blank to call Belichick's former employer, former boss, and say, hey, what do you think? You know him as well as anybody. And Kraft's like, I don't think you should hire him. I think y'all be better off going in a different direction. So I don't know what the motive was for Kraft to do such a thing. I don't think it's a strategical thing because, listen, the Patriots and the Falcons are in different conferences. I know, obviously, you think about Super Bowl 51, the 28-3 comeback, but there's no rivalry between the two. There's no bad blood, to my knowledge, at least. This, to me, this whole Belichick fiasco that we've seen over the last, really since Brady left, and how he's kind of gotten exposed to a degree through the Patriots document, the Dynasty documentary, which I have not seen yet. I'm reading the book right now. I haven't even gotten to the actual Dynasty part of the book. I have not watched the documentary. I will as soon as I finish the book by what's the guy's name? Jeff Benedict, who's a great author. But what we've seen with the documentary, all the reports, we knew his relationship with Brady was at best icy and at worst cold. Well, I guess that's the same thing. The last few years that he was in New England, that Tom was in New England. And now you have this report. Kraft is like, hey, guy who has 6 Super Bowl rings, probably isn't the best option for your franchise. This, to me, carving up the context of this is, don't burn bridges. Treat people the right way. If you have any sort of, you don't have to be best buddies with everybody, but be approachable. The guy who's employing you, at least try to be friendly to him or her. If they're not friendly back, okay, that's, you control what you can control. And it's a lesson that when you're partnered with somebody who's equally successful as you are, an ego steps in and you let it affect your outlook. You let it affect how you view yourself in a certain way. And then when that certain somebody leaves, just like a marriage, you got 2 successful people, one leaves, it's just as successful, even more so. That's Tom Brady going to the Tampa Bay Bucks. And the other is left behind, isn't as successful, maybe doesn't have the greatest relationship with other family members, and his or her ex are flourishing. That's Belichick. That's Brady. Brady is beloved in Patriots land. He's beloved by former teammates. Gronk and Edelman talk about him like they're his, like he's their twin brother. They freaking love that guy. Belichick, Edelman, Gronk still speak highly of him. Matthew Slater, they defended him when that dynasty happened. Okay, my man Tim Barnard hosts the Boston Sports Summit, which airs in about 15 minutes here on the grid. Definitely check that out. He talked about, like, hey, these guys are defending him. That's got to say something. And it absolutely does. These guys know Belichick as well as anybody. But I argue Robert Kraft knew him better than anyone else. And when it came down to certain decisions where Kraft, for the majority of the dynasty, was like, hey, Bill, you make the personnel decisions. When Tom Brady is a little kind of looking over his shoulder, he sees this kid, Jimmy Garoppolo, and Belichick's kind of grooming him to be the future of the franchise. And Brady makes it apparent to Robert Kraft, hey, I don't like this at all. Robert Kraft overrules Belichick. He says, nah, we're getting rid of Jimmy G. And Belichick, out of spite, just basically gives him away for a box of cookies to the San Francisco 49ers. So when you have that sort of icy relationship, which has happened over the course of 20 years, as Belichick has let the success affect his ego, affect his viewpoint. I've often criticized Belichick, and to a much lesser degree, but I've criticized him, Mike Tomlin, on is the game passing them by. Like, that, you can't win Super Bowls just led by great defenses. You need Patrick Mahomes. You need Joe Burrow. You know, you need the elite quarterbacks. You need Tom Brady, who happened to be in your building, and as we saw in Tampa, still a lot left in him. And he kicked him out the back door. Kraft, I think, looks at that and says, given Bill's recent drafts and the fact that I didn't overrule it, I had a chance. I'm the owner. I can make any decision I want. See Jerry Jones in Dallas. I could have kept Tom. And Belichick overruled me, basically kicked Tom out the back door. And that it's not like it took Tom 2-3 years. Immediately wins a Super Bowl, not with the 49ers, not with the Steelers, not with this historically successful franchise. Goes to the freaking Bucks and wins a Super Bowl in a pandemic year. I think at that moment, Bob Kraft looked around and he's like, I will never forgive this guy because I could have had another Super Bowl championship. We could have had number 7 in Foxborough, and instead it went to Tampa, which, listen, I love Tampa Bay. It's obviously Tom Brady loves it. I think he might still live there. But you don't think that bothered Robert Kraft? Like, I had a decision on who let go, and I let go of the wrong guy. It's kind of a little Oklahoma City Thunder-esque, where, you know, Kevin Durant was a free agent, but they kind of babied Westbrook, and they let the wrong guy go. KD goes on to win championships and finals MVPs, and Russell is a consistent round one exit. Make sure you build relationships with the right people. Make sure you're at bare minimum friendly to them. Listen, you can be a certain way around your players. Again, Belichick is kind of the old school drill sergeant, which I don't know if that really works in the modern NFL. If you look at today's coaches, you can coach guys hard. You can't, you know, treat the backup left tackle equally to Tom Brady. You just can't because he's just not as valuable. Coach guys hard, but there are levels to this. Jimmy Johnson had a great quote one time. There was a situation where, gosh, I think it was Michael Irvin. It was one of the star players in the Cowboys in the 90s, and some of the other backups fell asleep in a meeting. They fell asleep, just went out in a meeting. And Troy Aikman asked Jimmy Johnson, Troy Aikman, quarterback Cowboys, asked Jimmy Johnson, he's like, hey, like, you're not going to, like, because Jimmy Johnson was the ultimate drill sergeant. He asked Jimmy Johnson, he's like, you're not going to cut, like, Michael Irvin, whoever it was, right? He said, no, I'm a playmaker. I'm not cutting Michael Irvin. But that backup tight end, he's out of here. I don't want to see his face around this facility. I'm not quoting verbatim, but that's essentially how the story went. Belichick didn't even operate from that. It's, you follow my rule, doesn't matter who you are. It's gotten them one playoff appearance in which they got spanked by 30 to the Buffalo Bills. And every year since has been a losing season. Not to mention the drafts have been awful. Brady went on to have success. He won a Super Bowl 1 year, finished second for MVP the next year, was not great his last year in Tampa and probably his last year in the NFL, but did throw 25 touchdown passes, and I think set the NFL record for completions. He could still play. Better than what New England had. I think Bob Kraft is a prideful man, is a successful man, is a risk-taking man. And he looked at that, I think, February 7th, 2021, as cold as the relationship was with Belichick, I think that essentially ended it. Where it's, yeah, we can't work this anymore. That's where I'm at on this entire fiasco. So, this week's edition of Carving Up the Context, be careful who you piss off because it could come back to bite you. And it appears cost Bill Belichick the Falcons job, which wasn't, I mean, Raheem Morris, props to him. I think he's going to work really well with that squad. Would have been a nice job for Bill to have coming off an untalented Patriots team. You get Kirk Cousins, you know, say what you want about Kirk. He's way better than what New England had. Yeah, Kyle Pitts, Drake London, Bijan Robinson, this really nice, young, talented defense, an easy-peasy, lemon-squeezy division in an easy NFC relative to the AFC. Arthur Blank goes to Robert Kraft. Nah, we'll pass. We'll go with Raheem Morris. That tells you a lot. Check the comments. Interesting. Barry. Robert Kraft is a coward, in my opinion. You are the owner. Why keep him there for that long if you're going to undermine him? That's weak. If it wasn't for Belichick and Brady, Robert Kraft would not be in the Hall of Fame. I don't know if Kraft is in the Hall of Fame. I could be wrong on that. Like, it seemed like I remember thinking about that. Like, man, how's Jerry Jones in the Hall of Fame? Which, for the record, he should be. I've been critical of Jerry, but he's absolutely a Hall of Fame owner. I don't think he's in it. I could be totally wrong. No, he's not in. Robert Kraft is not in the Hall of Fame, which how he's not in is beyond me. Yes, that's fair. But again, you can't operate out of the... Hold on, if I could put the... that first comment. You said, yeah, if he ain't, he will be. Yes, he will be. You are the owner. Why keep him there for that long if you're going to undermine it? Because simply put, when you are successful for a certain period of time, you're going to get more leeway. Now, and that's again, not to keep bringing up the Cowboys. We'll talk about them briefly at the end of the show. But that's what makes the McCarthy thing so confusing, is that, you know, McCarthy has a championship. That was almost 15 years ago. And, you know, you keep having first round exit, second round exit, blown out to the 7-seed Packers. It's like, how is he getting this long of a runway? Now, I think there's reasons for it that are, you know, self-explanatory involving Jerry Jones, but great coaches tend to get long runways. Like, if Steph Curry, God forbid, decided to leave the Warriors, they let Klay go, they trade Draymond, Steve Kerr has a bad year, it's fine. Has another bad year, okay, we need to sort of get to the rebuilding. If he has three bad years in a row, the Warriors are going to move on. Like, he's going to get a certain leeway because he's an all-time great head coach. He's a Hall of Famer, one of the 15 greatest ever. But he's not going to get forever. Ultimately, Robert Kraft looked around and said, yeah, we can do better. A guy who refuses. I'm going to give him an opportunity to evolve, but Tommy wins year one. Bucks are really good in year two. Tom almost wins league MVP at age 44. Could have had him. You kicked him out. My guess is, rightly or wrongly, he kind of held a grudge against Belichick. That's my guess. So, but that was also the report talked about. This is interesting, that a friend of Bill Belichick, if we have the quote, do we have this here? This is from the article from Don Vanetta, Seth Wickersham, Jeremy Fowler. Fantastic piece. Highly recommend it. Said that a longtime friend of Bill Belichick said, quote, "I don't think Bill Belichick will ever coach again unless it's for Jerry Jones." Now, that apparently Belichick and Jerry are pretty close, and I could see how they could be friends, like away from football. Now, in football, I don't know, because both are big egos, which, listen, most successful people do. You know, Belichick's the ultimate, like, at the top of the list of the no-nonsense guy, and Jerry's nothing but, and Steven, the whole Jones family. So, I don't know. That's a weird fit if that does happen, which would have to be next year. Unless Jerry fired McCarthy in like week six, brought Belichick in. But I don't think it happens in the NBA. I think a couple of years ago, the Hawks fired, I forget the guy's name, blanking on the coach's name that they fired. Then they brought in Quinn Snyder. With all due respect, football is a way more complicated sport from an X and O standpoint than basketball is. A lot of basketball, a lot of coaching professional basketball is the... You know, Greg Popovich had a quote years ago, Steve Kerr's repeated it, that 10% of coaching the NBA's X's and O's, 90% is managing personalities. It's just a different league. There's only 15 players. You know, you're able to, it's 82 games. You're able to get a certain level of superstardom and notoriety off the court, unlike what you can get in the NFL. Like, you have to be a super duper duper star to be everybody knows who Tom Brady is. If you could never watch a football game in your life, you know who Tom is. Increasingly, that's Patrick Mahomes. It's Travis Kelce, you know, with the Taylor Swift relationship. Odell, because of social media, kind of reached that. But by and large, I mean, I'm trying to think of an NBA player who's, I mean, James Harden's way past his prime. I'd say more people know who James Harden is than CeeDee Lamb. CeeDee Lamb's way better at his sport than James Harden. So there you go. All right, this is going to be what I'm about to do. This is about to be the most difficult sports segment I've ever done in my life. This is, it is just, see, I'm not a nostalgic guy by nature, at least when it comes to sports. I'm not a nostalgic guy, because I think when you become too tied into the past, you have like blinders to the present. Like Kevin McHale was an all-time great player. He's one of the keys to a Celtics dynasty in the 80s and a deserved Hall of Famer. Pretty good coach as well. Better than he gets credit for. But this all, hey, I'll tell you what. Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, wouldn't have survived in the 80s. Oh, give me a break. Give me a freaking break. You can shoot the basketball like that, you can survive in the 80s. You can hand the ball like that, you can survive in the 80s. Kevin Durant might have been a different conversation because physicality definitely affects KD even more than it does Steph, which is weird because KD is, you know, a way taller guy. But this idea, oh, they wouldn't have. I have a rule. Great players would work in any era. Bill Russell, Wilt Chamberlain would have worked in 2024. I firmly believe that. Size, length, shot blocking ability. Now, is Wilt dropping 100 today? Absolutely not. That's just that's delusional. I don't think anybody's dropping 100 anytime soon. Who knows? Wimby might someday. But again, don't stay too tied into the past or you'll miss the present. This is one of those rare days. I want to make sure we have all of the graphics ready to go. We do. This is one of the rare days where I get to be nostalgic from the last 10 years or so. So do a segment every Wednesday called Carving Up the Context. You just heard that. I do another segment called Bryson's Best 10, which is I just basically rank my top 10 for whatever it is. Well, it feels appropriate today. The day after the Golden State Warriors dynasty as currently constructed comes to a screeching halt and an end, really. Feels appropriate to talk about the great moments. You know, this is a sad day in Dub Nation, but as my mom told me today, don't cry because it's over. Smile that it happened. So today, we're going to think about the good things about the Warriors dynasty. So get the background music going right now. Bryson's Best 10, the top 10 Warriors dynasty. Here we go. The top 10 greatest moments. The top 10 greatest moments of the Golden State Warriors dynasty. We'll start with number 10. Steph Curry breaking the all-time three-point record. This was 2 years ago at Madison Square Garden. He hit his 2,974th three-point shot. That is number 10 on my list, and here is why. So remember exactly where I was, what I was doing when I was watching. I was watching the basketball game. Steph Curry in the 2021-22 season was kind of chasing the record. The Warriors started that season red hot. Steph was playing at an MVP level to start and, you know, shooting the lights out of the basketball. But as this record, this Ray Allen record, 2973, started to come closer into view, Steph started to struggle a little bit. He went through a little bit of a slump, and I think a lot of that was he realized, like, people have been calling Steph the greatest shooter for a decade straight now, and rightfully so. But now that you get to literally have the title, I hit more threes than anybody, I'm the greatest three-point shooter ever. And he's approaching that, and he's kind of struggling a little bit. I remember there was a game in Indiana where he went for the record a couple times. Like, I kind of hope he misses because I want him to break the record in the greatest arena in the world, Madison Square Garden. And it was a great call. Brian Anderson delivered a fantastic call of the shot. All the celebrities there. Spike Lee was there. Ray Allen was in attendance. Reggie Miller, one of the all-time great three-point shooters, was there as well. So you had, at that point in time, 1, 2, and 3 on the three-point shooting list. It was an awesome moment. The Warriors ended up winning the game, which, you know, was a nice cherry on top. But Steph, from a statistical standpoint, officially that night in Madison Square Garden, December 14th, 2021, cemented himself as the single greatest shooter in NBA history. He's hit well over 3,000 threes by this point. And listen, he's going to hit over 4,000. If he plays long enough, is 5,000 within reach? I don't know. But Steph has shattered the record books, every record from three-point range. He's gotten that. And that is Steph breaking the three-point record, the 10th greatest moment in history of the Warriors dynasty. At number 9, a guy who sadly will probably not be a Warrior ever again, Mr. Klay Thompson. But let's look at a great Klay Thompson moment. His, I can't believe I'm saying this, to this day, 37-point quarter against, ironically, the Sacramento Kings. Klay Thompson's 37-point quarter, 9th on the list of the greatest moments in the history of the Warriors dynasty. Here's why. So, I remember this game. So it was like kind of a late January game. The Kings weren't very good. The Warriors were playing great basketball. It was the first year under Steve Kerr. Steph was in the midst of an MVP season, and everything was clicking. It was kind of a sleepy game. Nothing crazy happened. And then this joker goes nuclear in the third quarter. I want to read you Klay Thompson's third quarter stats in that 2015 game against the Sacramento Kings. He went 13 for 13 from the field. He shot 9 threes, hit all of them. It's a far cry from what happened last night, but let's not think about the bad, let's think about the good. Klay Thompson broke the record. I think the previous record was like 32 points in a quarter. George Gervin, I think, had the record. Klay Thompson against the Sacramento Kings. 37 for a game is like, wow, that guy played well. He did that in a 12 minutes. His 60-point game and whatever it was, 29 minutes, didn't make the list. Because this one, I don't think it'll ever be passed. If someone may score over 37 in the quarter, I don't think he'll do it on perfect shooting. I mean, 13 for 13 in the field, 9 for 9 from three-point range. One of the all-time greatest, in my opinion, the greatest offensive quarter I've ever seen in my life. I'm not sure if it'll ever be surpassed. Klay Thompson's 37-point quarter in 2015. The ninth greatest moment in the history of the Golden State Warriors franchise. At number 8, I remember this very well. The 3-1 comeback in the Western Conference Finals to beat the Oklahoma City Thunder in 2016. The Warriors 3-1 comeback over the Thunder. The eighth greatest moment in history of the dynasty, and here's why. So, listen, that was a weird series. The Warriors that year, obviously, 73-9. Steph wins another MVP. They blow through the Rockets. They get challenged a little bit by Portland, but they dust off the Blazers quickly in five games. And then they match up against Oklahoma City, who has Kevin Durant in his prime, Russell Westbrook in his prime, a good roster around him, Serge Ibaka, Steven Adams. The Thunder seal game one in Golden State. Warriors take game two. And then the Thunder in games 3 and 4 in Oklahoma City, I mean, obliterate the Warriors. Like, if you'd have told somebody who'd never watched basketball, hey, the white team the Thunder's playing, they won more games than anybody's ever won in a single season. You'd be like, no, they didn't. Boy, they're looking. But game five, it's close. Steph closes out the game with a steal on Kevin Durant. Hits a layup, yells to the crowd, we're not going home. And then game six, the infamous game six, Klay, 41 points, 11 three-pointers. Steph Curry chipped in with 30 of his own, hit the dagger shot. Klay hit the go-ahead shot about a minute before that. The Thunder kind of self-imploded. The Warriors won game six. And then game seven, Mr. Curry dropped 36 points and hit the dagger three to beat Oklahoma City and win that series 3-1. Now, this moment would have been higher had the Warriors went on to win the championship. We know what happened with another particular 3-1 lead against the Cavs that I don't feel like talking about today. But the Warriors 3-1 comeback in the Thunder is the eighth greatest moment in history of the dynasty. The eighth greatest moment, which led to the seventh greatest moment in the Warriors dynasty, which is Kevin Durant signs with the Golden State Warriors in 2016. KD signing with the Warriors, the seventh greatest moment in the history of the Warriors dynasty, and here's why. So again, this is a I remember where I was type of moment for me. So I remember the night before. See, at this point, I just turned, 13 years old? It's hard to believe. I didn't have Twitter, didn't have Instagram, none of that. But I was able to, I followed NBA news. NBA free agency just started, and I'm like, still reeling from the Warriors losing the finals to Cleveland. And Kevin Durant is the free agent. He is the guy that everybody, Boston, Washington, the Clippers, everybody's going after. Obviously, the Thunder. And I remember reading an article before I went to bed on July 3rd, 2016 that said the Warriors are a finalist. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I don't think it's going to happen, but maybe, just maybe, KD chooses the Warriors. Wake up the next day. It's July 4th, Independence Day. Go downstairs. I ate breakfast. I go downstairs in the basement, turn on the TV. I think it was Colin Cowherd's show. Turn on the TV. Breaking news, Kevin Durant signed with the Golden State Warriors, and I was just, it was nuts. It was a fantastic moment, because at that point I knew, ain't nobody beating us. You're telling me a champion from 15, an almost champion in 16, and a 73-9 Warriors team just added a guy who prior to that had won 4 scoring championships and an MVP. Yeah, nobody's beating this team. They didn't have to trade for him, none of that. He just signed with them straight up. And Kevin Durant went on to win 2 finals MVPs, 2 championships. And let's be real, had he stayed healthy in 2019, it would have been a three-peat. Kevin Durant signing with the Warriors, the seventh greatest moment in the history of the Warriors franchise. Very impactful. And KD, which is mind-boggling to me, still, it's people still holding against him for making a decision that was the best interest of him, basketball-wise and business-wise. Kevin Durant to the Warriors at number 7. At number 6, Steph Curry's back-to-back league MVPs. Steph Curry's back-to-back league MVPs, the sixth best moment, or moments, rather, in the history of the Warriors franchise, and here's why. So, Steph joined a very short list of guys who won back-to-back MVPs. Think about guys recently, such as Jokic, such as Giannis Antetokounmpo. LeBron's done it. Kareem did it. Moses Malone, most underrated player ever, did it. Michael Jordan. All the greats have gone back-to-back. Steph became one of those in 2016. 2015's MVP, he hit 286 three-point shots, which was a record. He broke his own record in doing so, led a 67-win Warriors team to the championship. To this point, he's the most recent MVP to win a championship in that same season. We'll see if Jokic or Shea or Luka, whoever wins this year, is able to do that. 2016 might have been the greatest offensive season we've ever seen, be it Kobe's 37 point per game year, any of James Harden's years, Jordan's 88-89 season. No matter how you slice it, the 2016 Steph Curry season was unreal. So I just said he hit 286 threes in 15, which was a record. In 2016, the record's 286. Stephen Curry hit 402 three-pointers. He broke his own record by 100, shattered his own record by 116 three-point shots made. Again, 400 is still yet to be surpassed. That record still stands today, and Steph is, again, continuing his assault on the three-point record books. Steph averaged 30 a game as a guard on 50-40-90 shooting, led the league in steals. It's one of the great offensive seasons we've ever seen in our lives. The back-to-back MVP stretch, certainly one of the pinnacles of Steph's career. Not many guys have won two MVPs. He's one of them. He's certainly one of the all-time greats and one of the 10 greatest to me, undeniably, to ever play in the history of basketball. Steph's back-to-back MVP is the sixth greatest moment in history of the Warriors franchise. Moving into the top five, some may be surprised how high this is, but I still hold it near and dear to my heart. The Golden State Warriors in 2015-16 going 73-9, the fifth greatest moment in the history of the Warriors franchise, and here's why. So the Warriors were the best offensive team that year, best defensive team, no surprise there. Again, I understand people try to poo-poo it because they ended up losing the finals to Cleveland. Totally get that. But I'm not going to say this is DiMaggio's hitting streak unbreakable. I'm not going to say this is Jerry Rice's receiving records unbeatable. I'm sorry. I don't think in my lifetime I will ever see a team go 74-8. I don't see it. In today's modern NBA, and we'll see, maybe it evolves and changes. Maybe there won't even be 82 games at some point in my lifetime. I do not see a team winning 74 games in an 82-game season. It's 73 is nuts. Steve Kerr, who ironically played for the 72-10 Bulls in 1996 and coached the 2015-16 Warriors, which won 73 games, he said after 96, he's like, nobody's getting 72. 20 years later, almost exactly, the team he coaches gets to 73. Again, in today's modern NBA, load management, the whole bit, I do not see a team getting to 74 wins. To go, again, just it's still mind-boggling. We know what Steph did. Draymond should have been defensive player of the year that year. Klay was an all-star. Iguodala was great. The roster was well put together and well coached. How you go an entire 82-game season and you don't lose double-digit games, we'll never see it again. I'm sorry, we will see anybody get 73. Dang sure won't see anybody get 74. That is the commitment you got to put to that, and one could argue that the Warriors going for that record may have taken a little bit, it sapped a little bit of the energy out of them for the playoffs. Not an excuse, but Andre Iguodala said in his book, which is literally right behind me right here, The Sixth Man, that he and the Warriors kind of regret at times going after 73-9, but it's still an unbeatable record, so it makes the top five. 73-9, the fifth greatest moment in the history of the Warriors. At number four, we move into ring time. The 2018 championship, Golden State in 2018, going back-to-back against the Cleveland Cavaliers and winning this ring right here. Do we have it? Oh, my goodness. That was anticlimactic. Right there. This ring against the Cleveland Cavaliers, Golden State sweeping Cleveland, beating the Cavs for the third time in 4 years. Listen, that 2018 title was the weirdest of the four championships, because that year, you're coming off a 2017 title, Steph in his prime, Klay in his prime, Draymond in his prime, and obviously KD in his prime, Iguodala the whole bit, Steve Kerr coaching the squad. The Warriors won 57 games that year, and it felt like nothing but locker room turmoil. David West, who was a veteran on that team, retired after that championship, said, hey, y'all don't know what happened behind the scenes, and it's like, what went on? Well, we'll see. Well, maybe someday we'll know, but in, you know, first round, gentlemen swept the Spurs. Second round, gentlemen swept the Pelicans and Anthony Davis. The third round, you're taking a Rockets team that isn't close to as talented as you are, but has you down 3-2, but game six, Klay shows up in game six, Warriors blow him out. Game 7, Steph almost has a triple-double, KD plays well, and the Warriors knock out the Rockets and go on to sweep the Cleveland Cavaliers in the NBA Finals to get 3 championships in 4 years. It was the title that officially cemented this Warriors team as a dynasty. The 2018 NBA Championship, the fourth greatest moment in history of the Golden State Warriors dynasty. At number 3, I call this the revenge title. The Warriors winning the Finals in 2017, beating the Cleveland Cavaliers 4-1, and winning this ring. I got all four of them, folks. 2017 title at number 3. So that team, until we see someone else down the road, undeniably the greatest basketball team ever assembled in the history of basketball, okay? So you got a prime Steph Curry, 2-time league MVP. Prime Kevin Durant, 1-time league MVP, 4-time scoring champion. Klay Thompson, multi-time All-Star. Draymond Green, 1 defensive player of the year that season, multi-time All-Star. One of the greatest sixth men we've seen in a future Hall of Famer, Andre Iguodala. Hall of Fame head coach, Steve Kerr. Golden State Warriors that year won 67 games. It's not 73, but I'll tell you what they did do. They swept the first round. They swept the second round. They swept the Western Conference Finals. And against the team that beat them in the finals, the Cavs, with LeBron averaging a triple-double in the finals, Golden State gentlemen sweeps the Cavs en route to an NBA championship in 2017 as the revenge title because Cleveland did get Golden State. In 2016, KD won his first finals MVP, put together an awesome series statistically. It's the most efficient basketball Kevin has ever played, and he's a very efficient basketball player. Again, the 96 Bulls, people talk about, oh, the Bulls never saw Game 7. The Warriors never saw a Game 6 and saw 1 Game 5. To me, the only team that could have taken that Warriors team in a 7-game series, 0-1 Lakers with Shaq and Kobe. That team was just as dominant, could have given the Warriors problems. 96 Bulls, get out of here. 81 Sixers, get out of here. And the 69 Lakers, get out of here. Couldn't have taken that Warriors team. 2013 Heat, get out of here. 16-1 in the playoffs and a dominant postseason run to a championship. The Warriors 2017 title, the great third greatest moment in the history of the dynasty. At number 2, they say there's no time like your first time. The Warriors winning in 2015, the first championship. Look at Steph and Klay there. Look like little kids. It's crazy how fast time flies. Warriors 2015 title is the second greatest moment in the history of the dynasty, and here's why. By the way, they won this ring right here, okay? Here's why. So again, I became a Warriors fan 2013 because I saw this little 6'3" guy by the name of Steph Curry dominating the Denver Nuggets in round 1. And 2014, they lose in the first round to the Clippers. They fire Mark Jackson. Like, huh? You fire Mark Jackson after a 51-win season and you almost go to the second round for the second year in a row in a franchise in Golden State that has been a joke for 20 years, or really for 40 years outside of Run TMC in the early 90s. And the Warriors go on to win 67 games. Steph wins MVP. They sweep the Pelicans in the first round. They get pushed a little bit by the Grizzlies, the grit and grind Grizzlies, the actual good Grizzlies, in the second round. But they're able to win that series in 6. Gentlemen sweep the Rockets in the conference finals. Down 2-1 to the undermanned Cavs, but they get it right. Kerr inserts Iguodala into the starting lineup. He didn't lock down LeBron, contrary to popular belief. LeBron still averaged like 34, 14, and 9 in that series. Nonetheless, Iguodala did play well, as did Steph, who should have won finals MVP. Iguodala got it, and the Warriors won their first championship in 4 decades as a franchise. It was a phenomenal night, phenomenal moment. Shocker, shocker, they did beat, you guessed it, the Cleveland Cavaliers in order to get that. And just a great moment, great night. And it was the first of many championships to come for the Golden State Warriors. Again, they say there's no time like doing it for the first time. The Warriors did that for the first time in 2015. The Warriors 2015 title, the second greatest moment in the history of the franchise. And that leaves only one, and it should be obvious by now. Number one moment in the history of the Warriors franchise, or the history dynasty. The 2022 We're Not Done Yet championship is the greatest moment in the history of the Warriors dynasty when they won this ring, this big gold massive ring right here. So listen, that was the listen, I'm 20 years old, I'm a new Steelers fan, lifelong Warriors, Red Sox, and Tennessee Vols sports fan. In my 20 years, going on 21 years of life that the good Lord has given me, that was the greatest night in my sports rooting life, and it's not even close. To be able to be in that situation where 2019, the Warriors lose the finals to Toronto. KD leaves in free agency. Klay, in that game that they lost to Toronto, tears his ACL. Draymond gets extended, okay? Then you have 2019-20. Steph breaks his hand. The team sucks. It's the worst record in the league. The next year, you're like, okay, here we go. We're about to revamp. And Klay tears his Achilles and misses the entire season. You're like, you got to be kidding me. Steph has a great year, but the Warriors lose in the play-in tournament. It's a very, kind of a similar situation now, although somewhat different due to the ages of the players. And all the media, dynasty over. We'll never see this again. Steph Curry, Kendrick Perkins, infamously, the zero championships. They end up winning 53 games. The gentlemen sweep the Nuggets, take out the fraudulent Grizzlies in six. Gentlemen sweep the Mavericks, who are on fire, and face a, admittedly, more talented Boston Celtics team. And Steph Curry goes berserk in that series. Klay hit big shots throughout. Draymond was great in Game 6, the closeouts. And Steph Curry, infamously, in Game 6, pointed to the ring finger. And that was that. Steph Curry visibly emotional after the game. And the Warriors were able to get the job done in 6 against the Boston Celtics. The 2022 title, man, that feels like an eternity ago now. The greatest moment in the history of the Golden State Warriors dynasty. A walk down memory lane. That was fun. I got to, for 15 minutes there, got to feel the old shine of being a Warriors fan. So let's go back through the list real quick. From 10 to 1. Steph Curry breaking the all-time three-point record against the Knicks. Klay Thompson's 37-point quarter in 2015. The Warriors' 2016 Conference Finals 3-1 comeback against the Oklahoma City Thunder, which led to number 7, Kevin Durant signing with the Warriors. Steph Curry's back-to-back MVPs, the 73-9 season, the 2018 championship, the 2017 championship, the 2015 championship, and last, certainly not least, the 2022 championship. I remember the show I did the next day. That was a blast. That was fun. All right, last topic briefly before we get out of here, because the 8 o'clock spot does start in 45 minutes. Stay tuned for that on the Grid Network. Stephen Jones, son of Jerry Jones, was talking about the whole all-in thing. That's something we've all criticized. You know, Jerry Jones said, we're going to be all-in. We're going to be all-in this season. The Dallas Cowboys are going to be all-in. By the way, it feels appropriate to say.
How about them Cowboys? Yeah!
Stephen Jones, in discussing this, says that, hey, I've never known us not to be all-in. We are our all-in for us is retaining our core players. Okay. Here's what people are missing about that, because people are like, oh, you liar. Y'all said you're going all-in. Now you're backtracking. I don't think they're backtracking. Stephen Jones essentially said, one of the things he said verbatim, I've never known us not to be all-in. So, logically speaking, that statement, you know, preceded by Jerry's, we're going to go all-in, only leaves the possibility or the reality that the Dallas Cowboys aren't going to change anything, which, not a surprise to me, not a surprise to most people, but to anybody, and I feel sorry for anybody who did this, but believe, hey, Jerry, I'll tell you what, he's not going to let this stuff slide anymore. We're going to go. No, that's not the Dallas Cowboys in the 21st century. I've waxed poetic about that time and time again. But Steven talking about, hey, our goal is to extend our key players. Dak, CD, Micah. Well, we're sitting here. It is April 17th, and none of them have an extension. And with all three, you have nothing but negative news. Micah Parsons, the report came out a couple weeks ago that patience has worn thin, and he's really irked the Cowboys franchise. With Dak, we basically have the news, hey, him and Jerry have, seems like mutually agreed, he's going to be a free agent next year. So you said, hey, we're going to, Stephen Jones, we're going to extend Dak. Well, Ask Pops. I don't think he agrees with you. And then for CeeDee Lamb, we get the reports. He's a contract holdout, as he should be. CeeDee Lamb's going to get his money. So it is just, I have said for years that I don't think the Cowboys get enough credit for how poorly they're run. That regardless of all the big flashy stars, Dak, the quarterback of the America's team, and CeeDee number 88, and this Micah Parsons kid who's going to tear up the league, the next Lawrence Taylor I heard, and Trayvon Diggs and all these guys, you can't win Super Bowls with bad management, bad general manager, a bad owner, and limited head coaches, which McCarthy is, Jason Garrett was, Wade Phillips, Chan Gailey. Bill Parcells really the only exception. He took the Cowboys from irrelevance to, hey, that's a respectable team. And let's be real, Wade Phillips, I mean, with the addition of T.O., basically won with Bill Parcells' team that he created, that he was able to develop. So Apparently, Stephen Jones, his definition of all in, really, Jones family's definition of all in is stand pat, do what we do. Okay. It's worked really well for you the last 28, 29 years, but what do I know? All right, that's all the time we have for today's show. Appreciate everybody stopping by. As always, be sure to catch Carving Up Live on Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific time right here on Twitter, as well as the Carving It Up YouTube channel and the Grid Network YouTube channel. And be sure to like, share, comment, and please take 2 seconds out of your day. Hit that big red subscribe button down there. Helps the channel grow exponentially. We're trying to get to 1,000 subscribers. We are getting close. I think we're close to like 950 now. So we are inching closer to that 1K. So if you have not subscribed, hey, takes a couple seconds. Down there, hit that big red subscribe button on YouTube and become part of the Carving Up family. If you have subscribed, tell everybody you know about the show and except your sleeping cat. My cat's been in a weird mood today. So just, you know, tread lightly. Also, just as important, be sure to go subscribe to the Grid Network. That's GRYD, the Grid Podcast Network, right here on YouTube, as well as any and everywhere you get your favorite podcasts, be it Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, any and everywhere you get your favorite podcasts on the Grid Network. My man, Tim Barnard, Boss of Sports Summit, is on right now. Check his show out. And in about 40 minutes, less than 40 minutes, the 8 o'clock spot, the Grid Network's weekly game show. I'm going to have to eat some crow, my Warriors takes. But you know what? Ride or die. Dub Nation till I die. I'm a stamp app. Pick integrity. I don't run from it. I run towards it. All right. See y'all on Friday. Please stay safe out there. Please be sure to take care of your physical as well as your mental health. And please, please, please be sure to contact your local state representatives and senators to demand change for gun violence in America, no matter where you lean, right, left, center. It's a problem that affects each and every one of us. And no matter what anybody on either side of the aisle says, there's not one solution that can fix it, but we've got to do something soon. Very, very important issue to me, and I know to a lot of people out there, and it affects all of us. So let's do what we can to address it. All right. See you on Friday. Stay safe out there. God bless y'all. Peace out. Man, I'm even off of my peace out. It's been a rough show. Thanks so much for watching the show on YouTube, and be sure to go click that big red subscribe button and check out the other clips and full shows from Carving It Up Live, as well as our other incredible content creators here on the Grid Network.